I'm going to start by taking the moderator's privilege and asking the first question and making it unfairly broad and address a point that all three of you touched on in your papers, but no one addressed directly, which is that I saw a common thread of a blurring of the hardware-software boundary becoming increasingly important in various ways, both from the point of view of threats as well as the point of view of defenses. Where do we put our defenses? Where do we think about our defenses being located? Would any or all of you like to take a stab at a kind of broader insight that you've learned about how we should think about these things a little differently?
So, especially thinking about countermeasures for the work that I've been doing, there's a lot of questions about whether things belong in hardware or software. So you could do things like add a filter on the hardware side and remove a lot of information and feel good about that. But then you run into the issue of you need to put this in all consumer devices, who's going to pay for that, who's going to want to waste space on it, and it becomes a real issue, even though it's sort of obviously the most effective defense. On the software side, it's a lot easier to just add things after the fact, but you're going to pay prices in efficiency. For example, talking about the key loggers, right? Noisy key had some latency in terms of processing user keystrokes, and you can keep it at a really manageable level, but there's always a price there that you're going to pay for doing things in software and having to insert yourself. So I think that it really depends on how you perceive the risk. I think that things, in many cases, can be done more effectively in hardware, but the costs are really great.
In my opinion, this is a problem that we have to deal with, like no matter what we are doing research on, because we can be sure that no matter what, an hardware solution will be better in some ways than a software solution. And we see that continuously. For instance, I'm doing research like on malware detection, and what I see every day is that, if I'm trying like to defeat something at the user level, then we can try like with a kernel level solution. If the threat runs at kernel level, then we opt for a virtualized solution. So there is always this trade-off. Obviously, the more hardware we go, kernel, then virtualized environment, then hardware, the more efficient the solution will be, the more resistant, the better. But the important point is that is going to be less likely to be deployed in real system. And that's actually why I think that my paper was somehow a good paper. It was trying like to fight something at the same level. Obviously, maybe like a really advanced keylogger could have defeated the whole approach, but still, we were fighting at the same level, so we could do something.
In the case of flash memory, the problem is obviously rooted in hardware. And what I'm finding is that I work with a lot of component electrical engineers that are studying this endurance at the gate level. And so, when you add the controller to the mix and then you higher up the stack in the application software, the problem is much different. And the vulnerability comes very easily from a software vector. And so until, the EE's working on at the gate level can fix it, we're going to have to really look at it in software. And I think that this problem can be addressed, reasonably easy, in an easy manner. But right now, the industry is, so focused on other security aspects of Flash, and very few people are acknowledging that these attacks against endurance can even be possible. And I encourage everyone to look at how these things are rated and keep that in mind, when you look at the endurance claims from some of these. But I do feel that this is a hardware problem that you can't really attack it via hardware. It's going to come from the software side.
Okay, so in the operating system?
I'm sorry?
Or in the operating system, in the controller, where's the software for that you think, what's the layer for defending against this?
I think, you know, several layers in the stack. I think that at the flash device itself, the Kells paper that I referenced, you know, speaks of basically partitioning the device into a trusted or, you know, private or public section. Right now, the flash controller doesn't differentiate across the media. If you gain, an interesting thing is that, you know, high up on the stack, if you write to flash, if you think you're writing at just, you know, one transistor, one location on that memory, further down the stack in the controller, it's trying to level where, so it's writing all over the place. And so that can be mitigated if a controller partitioned the device such that, you know, the general user only has access to writing to a small part of it. But up at the operating system, it would be possible to detect dangerous wear activity. And some SSDs, particularly the Intel ones, do have some applications that look at this. The efficacy of that is really unknown. We haven't evaluated that. But we think, you know, up the stack, that can definitely be addressed as well.
Okay, thanks. So I'd like to remind anybody with questions to please head down toward the microphone. And I see Patrick making a movement in that direction.
So Patrick Trainer, Georgia Tech. Thanks, guys, for great talks. One point to sort of remind people, and something that I thought was done well in all three of the talks, is that all of the public comments that the PC wrote addressed, you know, some issues that we found in the papers, and all three of the authors in their talks actually then addressed those public comments. So, again, for this experiment, you know, the authors have had a chance to respond to that. So that was really great from all of you. The final talk I had a question on, and it was in particular about this idea of distance and distance of the measurement. Have you thought about, say, measuring from the box on the outside of the house? I mean, using something like a TED and actually plugging in? Because most of those devices, as I look around my own neighborhood, aren't protected. I mean, I can get to them fairly easily. Have you considered it? Are you looking to do that?
Yeah, so, we're definitely going to knock that water over. So the work that I referenced from this past year's CCS, they were using a device that could measure from any outlet on the same circuit, so any household plug would work. And I do have some hardware that takes the same type of measurements, but I haven't had a chance to test it thoroughly yet. There's also a paper to appear at an IEEE workshop on forensics later this year where they used a smart meter that actually measured only once every couple seconds to do things like classify videos. The thing about doing that in the specific case of like a general purpose computer is that you're dealing with a pretty complicated system when compared to something like a TV, where the power consumption scales really nicely and linearly with like the average brightness of the pixels on the screen. So it's a little bit unclear how much of a performance penalty it would take, but it's definitely something that I'll be trying.
Willink, NC State. So we've seen a lot of these sort of low-level attacks against systems, and they keep coming out in the conferences and go, no, how am I ever going to even handle that when there's all these much larger problems to work with? But I thought the last talk, I really liked how you took this different spin. Said, here is this problem. We've seen some research trying to measure profiles. This is a bad problem. But hey, we can use that. And it is because we have a lot of very specific systems doing very specific tasks, and as we have smarter homes and we have all these embedded devices in there, I think there's a lot of opportunity for that. Have you thought about other attacks other than just these power attacks that we've seen in the literature over the past 5 to 10 years that were very sort of minute details that you could get a covert channel or all this that we could use for good in these similar sorts of ways?
I haven't thought about any specifically, but that's a really great thing to think about, definitely. So for example, the thing that a lot of people are familiar with is like a lot of the Tempest work where it's relying on EMI, and I haven't come up with a constructive application for it, but it seems like there's been so much research in that area for so long, there's gotta be something sitting there that people haven't seen yet. And I would imagine it's the same for some of the other side channels. So actually, at the main conference, one of my lab mates is gonna be talking about a throttling mechanism where they use SRAM decay. So they're leveraging remnants, like cold boot attack style, except they're using it to set a timer so that you can't launch brute force attacks against things like smart cards that already have SRAM in them. So that's actually one example of sort of turning it around and using it for good, but I don't have any others.
Sarjan Kapun at the Hazurik. So I have a question related to the flash memories. So actually two questions. So one is, have you looked at some sort of out-of-spec attacks on the flash memory in terms of, for example, page reprogramming, which is clearly out of spec and might cause additional failures? And if you haven't, that might be a good thing to look at.
Could you explain the out of spec?
So you're not supposed to reprogram before you erase, right?
Oh.
So you could try reprogramming the remaining bits, for example, and setting them to whatever, ones or zeros, and then, well, essentially back to ones. So, and then you could try to cause more accelerated failures. So looking to those kind of approaches might even speed up failures.
Yeah, we had thought about that. And when you test the raw flash ICs, you have more control over
mm-hmm.
that.
Sure.
But when the controller's in the middle, you just
sure.
yeah, you just don't have the visibility. And so really we didn't use any advanced methods to see how the attack was, you know, being waged at the flash IC level. And we didn't do any post-mortem type analysis on the device to see where was being affected on the device. But that's definitely something that would probably accelerate the attack.
So you're not looking at raw, you were not looking at raw flash at all, or this will be used?
We used a USB flash drive,
okay.
And we basically, on a Windows box, we wrote the application in C, and we were just basically, you know, writing data to files, just streaming data to files.
I think you could have more interesting results, more results at least looking at raw flash. And another question, if I may, is it okay?
Go for it.
Have you looked at, once that the device already has some, or is in some way compromised such that there is a malware running on it and trying to cause such a sort of system-wide failure, have you looked at particular scenarios where this can, you gave some examples at the beginning, but do you have one very concrete scenario? Because I'm not sure if in those kind of scenarios is raw flash being used, or is there an FTL there? Or?
Very, very, very rarely is raw
okay.
flash used. Almost in every single situation, some commercial off-the-shelf form factor for
okay.
the flash.
I see.
Even in the military devices, a lot of them use the VME bus and backplane architecture, but within them, they'll use COTS controllers, you know, SandForce flash controllers on a different backplane. And so,
so how are those systems partitioned in the sense that if you already have malware running on it, maybe it has sort of a system-wide access in any case, so and then it can cause any kind of failure. So are there any scenarios where this particular attack would be sort of more harmful than? Yeah.
You'd really, there's just so many applications. I think that there probably are some systems where if you launched an attack, it'd bring it down. It would, you know, be pretty bad, especially if it's, you know, a critical SCADA system or something. But obviously, on the other end, if you have a USB flash drive, you know, if I attack one of your conference flash drives that they gave you, it's probably not going to, you know, do anything other than annoy you. But it's definitely something to consider. And I don't know if any of us are really going to want to go off and, you know, find a general characterization of the problem. But I think those that implement flash in systems, and I can speak for the programs that I work with, we're going to look at this very closely. You know, flash is very attractive to us for many reasons, and we're going to go to great measures to test the devices that we use in-house, and we encourage everyone to do the same.
And I want to point out, this microphone is not reserved exclusively for former Patrick McDaniel students, but so far it's working out that way.
Anyone who wants to also become an advisee of a former Patrick McDaniel student, you know, you're welcome to use this mic as well, and come see us after the talk. So, Kevin Butler, University of Oregon. Thanks. I enjoyed all of your talks. So, actually, I wanted to pose yet another broad question. So, a lot of what you've talked about is you know, at this hardware software interface, and it appears that, you know, there's a lot of things going on, you know, at these levels that you have to be cognizant of at higher layers of the system. So, you know, from the standpoint of system design, there's been a lot of, a general system design philosophy is modularity and layering, but you have this sort of this corollary of the semantic gap that's introduced when you have layers. And so all of your attacks sort of rely on specific domain knowledge happening at the low layer, at the low level. So from the standpoint of system design, how do you think we should be dealing with? Do you think that the era of layered systems should be coming to an end, and that we have to be cognizant of what's going on at the bottom, and that we should be tailoring our systems to those? Or do you think that these types of problems are just not going to go away as long as we have these semantic gaps?
I'll speak first. I think that the problems are not going to go away. My background is a systems engineer, and we make these systems of systems. And so we have, this layer, this huge stack, and we rely a lot on these proprietary, these COTS modules. And so for us, we are really just kind of piecing together systems from these modules and building these stacks. And so, further down the stack, we don't see that really going away as people continue to try to standardize.
My opinion is that we see so many problems because we retain legacy all the time. For instance, in the context of keystrokes being delivered, the reason why so many things can be done at the level is because just later on, many like functionalities have been added to a system that was supposed like to do something else. And since now, for instance, the user should be allowed to install like a little application that configures the additional keys like on the keyboard, there are a lot of facilities that actually like can be subverted. So in my opinion, like, it's a design problem. It's the fact that we're trying to use the same system to do like things that the system was not designed to.
In terms of power analysis, I think that, obviously I'm not ready to declare an end to layered systems, but I think that optimizations at the hardware-software boundary have become increasingly important in terms of mobile devices and energy efficiency efforts and things like data centers as well. So one of the things that we reference in the paper is there's a Mac Mini ad that essentially reproduces the keystroke figure that I had up there where they type Apple and you can see the power consumption drop between each keystroke, and they're promoting it as like a green feature. There's also a quote from Microsoft about Windows 8 saying, oh, well, you can do a handful of things in the background, but if your application doesn't have focus, we're just gonna dump it off in memory because we need to be super energy efficient and we wanna preserve battery life as much as possible. So I think that the energy proportionality is by and large a force for good, and it requires things to be perhaps more tightly coupled than you would like them to be from like a programmer's or designer's perspective to really get all the efficiency out of them you can.
Thanks.
Kevin.
So I'm the next Kevin. Kevin Fu, president of UMass Amherst, although moving to Michigan at the end of the year. Question for my non-student. I have a question about the other two papers, or just want to hear your feedback. So. Why don't we first just flash memory. Did you look at, or what are your thoughts on not just wearing down the flash, but power consumption? So when you wear out flash memory, one of the interesting things is that the power consumption goes up sometimes. And I was curious if you've thought about that in the mobility space. And then before you answer that, I wanted to just seed in the mind for the keyboard paper. What about the future when, think about, 10 years out, Are we still going to have keyboards, or what? How might these morph into the user interfaces that we seem to be adapting to with multi-touch and these horrible keyboard interfaces on the mobile phones? But so I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. I had not thought about that. I think that's an excellent idea. Working through the operating system with this gangrene software, we're very limited in what we could monitor.
Do soldiers carry batteries?
Yeah, I'm very interested in that, and I think that would be kind of a next step. I would like to look at, just basically looking at the power draw on these and how that changes, how that varies with use.
Okay.
That's actually quite interesting because I haven't thought about that. I think that the situation will be even more complicated because, I mean, right now we're just dealing like with just like a standard way of inputting to a system, and we know that, that this way has been used like to identify for identification purposes, and is also like target like of many attacks. Obviously, like since we are seeing that other input systems are being adopted, widely adopted. I mean, like look at the touching interface. Obviously, we have to update like our concept of authentication, but this is already being done. Obviously, like the more features that we add, like the more interesting, and more research is needed. But that's pretty much it. I mean, like when you start like from the keyboard, when what you add are basically like features. I'm gonna make an example of the touch interface. There've been many papers like extend the concept of keystroke dynamics, considering the fact that I have also sensors. So the information that before was used for authentication purposes were just keystrokes. Then like also acceleration when I just use it. For instance, there was a keylogger called TapLogger that based on your way of inputting like numbers was able like to basically get the input without knowing which part of the screen were being pressed, but how the device was being moved. So, I mean, like the more input, the more input types, the more ways are there like for malicious parties like to get the information that they're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, and actually one question for Shane. How are you going to return, pay back the lab for that $28,000 oscilloscope you destroyed?
My current plan is to graduate before you can do anything to me.
That seems like a bad plan.
Especially since I need him to sign off on my graduation. But to my credit, I did order a new oscilloscope to replace it, and this one was only $24,000.
Hi, Bhargava Shastri, Rice University. My question is regarding the third talk where you talk about power proportionality and all that. My experience with side channel attacks, I was doing some work on attacking 8-bit microcontrollers a long time back, is that invariably you need to have a characterization phase where you actually sort of build a model of the power consumption and then launch an attack. So how does it fit into the attack model? To characterize a device, you would need physical access, and that would probably exclude many cases of attack where an attacker might not actually have physical access. That's my question.
Yeah, so I've certainly thought about that. The classifier that we used for this work is really very much a black box approach. It doesn't do any explicit modeling. We take these power traces, we convert them to the frequency domain, and we just feed the power in each chunk of frequency to the support vector machine as features. So it's not very flexible, and you do have to worry about things like changing hardware or even software configurations in extreme cases. But there are a couple things that suggest some of this is still valuable. So first, there are an awful lot of identical computers, it turns out. People are always like, oh, well, you have to measure and attack the same computer. But there are, I don't know, 20 MacBooks in this room, and they're all unibody MacBooks, it looks like. So it might be good enough in cases like that. And on the defensive side, if you wanted to use it for something like malware detection, you probably will have physical access, and you could spend time sort of understanding what a device looks like in a clean state if you're going to use a whitelisting approach, right? So that's sort of fundamental to whitelisting, I think, that you have to take some time to learn what's okay.
Hi, Topolo Femi from the UW. I have a VLSI background, and I just wanted to, what we thought back in school was you have three metrics, performance, area and power consumption. How, in the context of your talks, how do you see security embedded in hardware from the basic principles of design, and how would you go about it?
So in the case of power side channels. I think that there are opportunities if you care about it enough, right? If you have a secure application and you're really worried about it, I think there are opportunities to leverage things down at the architecture level to do things like introduce non-determinism or randomness. So you could perhaps like intentionally manipulate DVFS settings or things like that. Someone suggested that to me once. And up at the software level, you could do things like randomize the renderer in a browser. But I think that there are lots of opportunities at the hardware level if you care enough to either intentionally introduce elements that will do filtering or to make things non-deterministic. But it really depends on how secure you want to be against this type of attack.
Well, I still think that hardware is not the way to go, basically because like it's quite impossible, I mean, like to impose a new way to design it, or basically like they have tried like to introduce an architecture's new way like to think out with respect to commodity hardware, and all of them have failed. So I see more probable like a change of design in current systems, or the fact that the hardware may optionally make available to the user like new means, like to for instance get new performance measurements. There is like Intel that in collaboration with McAfee are they want like to introduce some low level performance counter that can be used by software to analyze it, maybe like detect if there is any malicious software running, but I don't think that the hardware must be like designed from scratch. I think that is more like of a incremental approach must be.
I think in the case of flash, security isn't baked into the flash memory itself. I mean, really the industry is focused on increasing density, you know, reducing the form factor, keeping attractive price points. With respect to the controller, I think that you can definitely bake some security into it. I don't think it's done too much right now. The big thing people in the flash industry are worried about is secure delete. They don't really talk much, at least that I know of, about attacks on endurance. But I think that it can definitely be built into the controller. We just have to shift priorities right now. Right now, even enterprise is wanting, you know, greater density, lower cost, and some of these enterprise devices use controllers that have capabilities to extend the endurance even further, but they kind of swing more towards capacity. But I think that the controller is a great way to approach it.
Thank you.
Satchuk from Georgia Tech. My question is about the third talk, specifically on the malware profiling. I just wanted to know how repeatable is that? Maybe I missed that point, and also have you, you know, considered looking at other malwares, and did you only, you know, take a look at only two malware sample, so basically, you know, what can we learn and how can we basically, you know, move forward with this?
Yeah. I mean, repeatability is definitely a concern with the one result that I presented, partially because I destroyed the hardware that I measured on, but also because it wasn't the kind of thing that was easy to repeat a number of times and do the same. So I haven't tested a wide variety of hardware and malware, but it's definitely something that I'm working on, and I'm working on getting things like real medical devices or SCADA system components so that I can test things in a much more real-world setting. So I definitely have every intention of trying to make things as repeatable as possible.
Is this going to be before graduation or after?
Before.
Okay.
So Patrick Trainer again from Georgia Tech, and I have two questions. The first, I think we probably might need help with this one, but it goes to the gentleman from Indiana. And the question is, a couple of months back, Facebook had a problem in which they accidentally deleted some number of their users' contact lists. And there was a big fuss about it, but I believe eventually there was some restoration process that helped them. You mentioned in your talk that an application designer might actually contribute to this process of wearing down memory accidentally. And I wondered, is there a legal aspect to this? Is there some
assignment of fault, or are we just to wait until, let's say, MySpace accidentally, you know, destroys my flash hard drive? So is there a policy sort of outside of the, we talked about software and hardware, well, we'll go to yet another level of abstraction. And if anybody happens to be a lawyer or in the audience has an opinion, please chime in.
Yeah, that's a great question. That's an interesting point, but it is very conceivable that someone external to yourself, an application external, could affect wear in your device. I just think that, I'd have to think about that some more, but I think that's a very good question. And that, I guess, attribution would be difficult. For one, you know, the black box nature of the device might be difficult to find out where that wear is coming from, unless you're the savvy user or new tools are developed, and to, I guess, pin it on them. But it's a very good question.
Yeah, to follow up to that, it occurs to me that one application of your attack might be, you know, you might have devices like environmental sensors in which the attack can come from manipulating the environment that it's sensing, mm-hmm. right? Causing it to do writes in some particular way that exploits the architecture of mm-hmm. Of how it's laid out its file system or what have you. So, you know, it's not clear how you would defend against that because the device is kind of, you're exploiting the way the device is intended to work. Mm-hmm. So I have one more broad question for you, and I think it's mostly for the flash and the power talk, but I think it also applies to keyboards to some extent, in that a common thread is attacks that are consequences of optimization, right? In the case of power-efficient computing, we have more power efficiency, and therefore we have this new side channel. In the case of flash, we're using technologies that, you know, can give us better performance, but they wear out more quickly. And, you know, these are natural choices for people trying to sell these devices to do as much optimization as possible because that's the specification that you're optimized for. If you add security into the mix, you know, there's this new requirement that wasn't anticipated by the designers that you guys are exploiting in some way that they weren't anticipating. Is there a lesson for future optimizers about how to think about these things in the design process that would have frustrated some of these kinds of attacks?
I have a hard time answering that one. I think that there's a definite trade-off there, and where you are on that argument, you know, the security versus the usability, I think that's, you know, everyone knows that's really going to depend on what type of product you're working on. But I don't know if there's going to be any lessons learned here. I think the significant thing for some folks is that if you're just using, you know, commercial off the shelf products, you really have no influence. And so what you're going to have to do is, in many cases, just use what's available. In the case of some industries requiring very rugged products, you just have to buy off-the-shelf products, and you have to provide mitigations yourself in many times. And that's just something that that's certain segments have gotten very good at that. If you look at the hard disk drives, for a long time, they were horrible from an environmental ruggedness standpoint. And over many years, the drives themselves have gotten better, but certain people have gotten very good at mitigating the weaknesses of those drives. I think flash is something that's still relatively new for some industries, and so we need to just work on that. But myself, I'm not, I hope to adapt to the products that are available and just kind of plan on the worst case that they are going to be focused on price and the consumer and not security.
So we're all going to die.
In my opinion, like, it's not, the issue is not solvable. I mean, even like if a specs says something, say that you don't have like to connect like that infrastructure to the internet, people will do it anyway. I mean, like, look at SCADA systems. Like, the biggest part like of the problems that we're dealing with is because like people do things that are not supposed to do. So, I mean, like, we can actually like have like a wonderful architecture, but someone will try like to exploit it, like, and we all know that it depends on what level like you perform the attack. from a physical point of view. I mean, like, especially like with this work, I mean, like, you can always do, no matter what the architecture was, but you can actually like go one level up. So it cannot be solved.
Yeah, so I'm of the opinion on the attack side with power analysis stuff that I can't think of any sort of general systematic way that designers who are optimizing energy efficiency could have foreseen that. And if they did, I am of the opinion that they probably should not have cared too much. Because if you think about, like I mentioned before, there's a lot of this old Tempest work, and there are standards for EMI leakage resistance, and you can buy a keyboard for like $500 that's covered in shielding, but none of us have one. So, you know, if you're in a skiff or you're doing something very sensitive, then it's worth caring very deeply about. But I think that for the average person in the security community even, it's something that you should sort of know about and keep in mind. But I think that going forward, trying to use it constructively is going to be the much more general and fruitful direction.
Yeah, thanks. So Raheem Bia from Georgia Tech. So this question is for Shane. I really like the talk. I like all the talks. But you mentioned like the different hardware configurations as like a weakness for the scheme. But I was wondering if you thought about it as a strength. I mean, can your technique detect if the hardware has changed, for example, if I've plugged in my phone into my USB port, or I think even for a complex system like a MacBook, but even something as small as like a USB thumb drive, if that's been plugged into a machine, I think the DOD would really appreciate that. Maybe this is for Kevin. But I think the DOD would be really excited if you can detect that by monitoring the power. So have you thought about that at all?
Yeah, I've thought about a number of things like that, and I think that you can detect a lot of it, but I always end up in this discussion with people that I always have trouble with, where they say, oh, you should try scenario X, and I think, ah, that would be really great, but then I can't run all of the experiments for all of the things. Right. But specifically, like detecting if a USB drive is plugged in, I think is something that has obvious benefits and would be worth looking at. And my guess is that if nothing much else was going on the computer, you could probably detect it pretty reliably.
Right.
Because I mean, even like the UI responsiveness, you can detect a USB drive being mounted, right, in a lot of cases. So I would not be at all surprised to see that appear in the power consumption.
All right. Thanks.
Kevin.
Wait, just one feedback to over there. Actually, some hospitals glue over the USB port in their computers, as in DoD installations too.
That's what solvents are for. All right, do we have any other? Okay, so I want to, please, you guys are certainly entitled to.
So I have a question for Robert. My question is, have you looked at whether you can get things like products intended for OEMs that include like just the flash cells and the FTL or something, but not a whole package drive? Like, have you looked into whether you can get hardware that decomposes some of these layers a little bit so that you can understand where each thing is happening?
There's a lot of published work on some of these methods that are used. And so there's some disclosure of how they employ these things. But the interesting thing is in the flash industry, there's on the order of 200 different vendors that are providing flash products compared to 3 or 4 that are providing hard drives. And their competitive advantage lies solely in these methods that they use to extend the life of flash. And so they're very, very closely held. And so you can learn some from looking at the popular literature, but really it's going to come, the finest level of granularity is going to come to you in the controller. And so you can get the controllers themselves absent of the flash, and you can try to figure out how they work. But I haven't looked at the granularity further down to see if you can buy like IP for wear leveling or for the data deduplication or anything. But I would be very interested. We weren't able to do it for this paper, but to try to reverse engineer some of these controllers to see exactly what they're employing.
So I expect we'll be seeing more papers about weaknesses at the hardware-software boundary rather than fewer papers in the future. So I want to thank all three of our speakers and for everybody who asked questions. So thanks. So.